All right, I got to fly through a bunch of stuff here. Because we got Jake Allen joining us this time. But I got thoughts. I got thoughts on the Jays. Well, you know, I guess you can probably predict those. A quick NBA Finals or Conference Finals thought, and a quick one on the Oilers who play tonight, too. I'll flush all these out maybe a little bit later in the show or definitely tomorrow. But, yeah, here's a bit of a rapid fire to start today. One, I got to do the NBA Conference Finals first because both are 3-0. Mm. And I really didn't expect that. I expected that in the Celtics series. I really just thought, oh, this is a bummer. And then Halliburton went down, and I don't care about the win percentages of the Pacers in a couple of these games, although I will say that watching the way Boston came back in Game 3 was pretty incredible. Mm. Just the way they get stops when they start to lock in on defense, they are a problem. All the stuff that we talked about Minnesota, Boston kind of has that too, except for it's just different. They don't have it with the size, right? They don't have a crazy interior defense, but their perimeter guys are just beasts. They throw four guys at you that are just hunting the ball and forcing turnovers over and over and over again. And we just didn't get to give them enough flowers because their path has been so boring. Even now, you're like, you want to watch Pacers Celtics? I'm like, no, I'm good. I was really excited for the Timberwolves and Dallas series. I picked Minnesota to win the series, and I regret it so much, obviously, because they're down. But here's what I missed. I was rooting for Denver in the Denver series. Like, I love Anthony Edwards, and I was so excited by him, but I had this just underlying feeling of, man, I hope Jokic gets through. And this is why, is because the 22-year-old superstar that has to carry a team offensively, there's a reason why it's unprecedented. There's a reason why it doesn't happen in this league. And they got red hot, and Ant was brilliant in that series. And their defense was built to stop Denver. And they won that incredible Game 7, and we saw them at what they look like at their very best. Also, Karl-Anthony Towns looked like he went up a level, and in this series, he's just completely disappeared. But yeah, the 22-year-old kid has struggled against another offense or another team. He hasn't been able to play well against Kyrie. He's had to do too much, and he's burned out, and the decision-making in some of these games, you're watching it, and the thing that I can't believe that I missed that was just so obvious that was staring me right in the face, because I thought things like, Dallas the last series wasn't getting as much from Luka, and they were relying a lot on their bigs to score at the basket, get rim runs. Like, Derek Lively was incredible. Gafford was incredible. And I thought, okay, well, Minnesota's going to do a better job of taking this away, and they're going to force everything to be on Kyrie and Luka. And Luka looked like a guy who was already gassed. And now it just seems like he was resting in the first two rounds and is kicking it up a notch here. But the main thing I missed was when they're closing these games. And I felt it right after Game 1. I put it on my Instagram, put it out on Twitter when I picked Dallas in Game 2. Was Game 1, you saw it. When it gets into crunch time, when the chips are down, it's Luka Doncic, the best scorer in the NBA, and Kyrie Irving, arguably the... I was thinking about this. He's going to go down kind of as the Scottie Pippen of guards, the greatest number two that has maybe ever lived in terms of a Robin to a Batman, versus Anthony Edwards, who's 22 years old, making bad reads, like throwing the ball out of bounds, and Naz Reid.
Yeah.
Like, Naz Reid is in the conversation. Great playoffs for him. He's been unbelievable. But that's the four.
There's a lot of Kyle Anderson last night.
Yeah, that's my point. Yeah. Is you're looking at these two teams down the stretch when you need a bucket and you need a big shot. And one is Luka, who can shoot that step back that he shot in Game 2, a brilliant signature moment. And the other is Karl-Anthony Towns going to the basket and flailing and look, he looks so uncoordinated when he's doing this. And now he's talking about shooting 1,500 shots a game, and he just doesn't look right. So it's going to be Dallas. It's going to be Boston. I can't wait for it. But damn, I feel stupid. I really feel stupid kind of falling for the Minnesota thing when everything in my soul was telling me that they're just not there. They're just not ready. By the way, I've always been such a huge Daniel Gafford guy that I've always been a Gafford guy that I really enjoy watching him do this. quickly, too, Jays, The weekend was a nightmare. They lose to Detroit. They finally score some runs. They come back. They show some moxie, right? They looked good. Came back from down 5 runs. They came back late in the ball game, and then they blow that save. And yeah, it's a walk-off. And so I went out and I was sitting on a patio, and like I was brewery, Simon's wife's brewery, just so happens to happen. And I was watching the game on my phone. And the guys beside me, one guy got up to go to the washroom. The other guy was like, oh, you got the Jays game on? I was like, yeah. He's like, yeah, I don't really watch much, but they're bad this year, right? I went, yeah. And that's the point the Jays have reached now, is they are into everybody in the city knows they stink mode. They're there, you know? They've got the reputation. Nobody, this guy couldn't tell you a thing about the Toronto Blue Jays team. You know, he didn't know a lick, which is fine. He was just trying to make conversation with a stranger, and that's it. Is they're not so good this year, right? Yeah, man, that's correct. They are not so good this year. It's going to be a long summer. I read Ben Nicholson-Smith's piece last night. They got to play at a 95 win pace from here on out to basically be a playoff team. At bare minimum, it's a 90 win pace just to get to 84 wins, which is not a playoff team. That's just the Diamondbacks of last year. That's what that bar was. I don't think it's happening. I think we're in the mode now. We're in a long stretch of, hey, what are the pieces that you're selling? What are the pieces that you're keeping? And how deep does this cut go? Because it looks like the cut is coming. Lastly, Connor McDavid. I really thought the Stars were the better team. I thought that this series might start in a way that was going to get pretty, I don't want to say ugly, but I did think it was going to be a mismatch. And the first game, there's this weird thing where Dallas drops all their first games, and Edmonton was coming off of the game 7 and had all the momentum, and you were like, okay, so I could sort of see that one. They outplayed them. They look good. But Dallas did the thing that other opponents have been able to do against Edmonton, which is close late in these games. And I mentioned, you know, I was texting with friends saying that to me was more like a Dallas C-plus game, and it still went to overtime, right? And that was an Oilers A game. That was the best their third line played all series. And game 2, I know Dallas won, but Edmonton still looked really good, and I'm really encouraged. And I genuinely feel like with that team, there is something like McDavid can smell it. Like they know they're in range here. And I was going into that series, and I was really picking Dallas, and I went, oh, you know, like I just think this is the Stars. I think they're the best team left. Nobody's really going to pay attention to them as much because they're the Stars, and they wiped the floor with Colorado quick, and so we didn't really get a chance to settle into that series properly. And yeah, awful uniforms. Sorry, I don't care that their fans are loud. Awful market. Like, who? I don't root for the Stars. I don't care about the Stars. I don't like those. Anyway, I kind of shifted. I sort of feel like Edmonton has a real chance to capture the moment tonight. Anyways, yeah, Leafs hired their new head coach last week. And then this guy got a new head coach as well. It's Jake Allen, Devils goaltender. What's up, brother? How are we doing?
Good. How are you?
I'm good, man. Hey, so let's just start with this. You tried your hand at media. What do you think? How'd you go?
Yeah, you know, it was a cool experience, obviously, looking back on it now. I mean, I'll tell you what, I was pretty nervous at the beginning. I think I built it up a little bit bigger in my head than it was. But, you know, the guys there are great and made you feel real at ease. So, it was cool to see that side of it, you know, a side that obviously promotes our game so well. Without the media, you know, none of us have jobs, and, you know, it was really interesting. I'm glad I did it. It was a great experience, and maybe again someday.
Yeah, the first time you're on TV and they're like, the lights are going on. You're like, oh, is everybody looking at me? Why is everyone looking at me? It's the weirdest feeling. Right. But then you probably remembered, hey, you know what? I'm a professional hockey player and they're asking me to talk about hockey. I should be all right here. I should be okay with this.
Yeah. Once you get a first couple of minutes onto you, you were fine. But, you know, you're right. It was more or less finding the right camera.
Yeah.
You know, taking the information in the earpiece, trying to put it all together, make sure I talk what I was supposed to talk and shut up when I was supposed to shut up. So, no, it was good.
Yeah. No, that's cool, man. Yeah. I thought you did a great job. Like, I was really enjoying. I love when, current players come on. And one of the things, so I'm actually in the NBA right now. They put Draymond Green on the inside the NBA panel. And I'm not a fan of it just because there's already 4 people on the panel, and it's a famous show. We're not going to get too much time with it, but I love how basketball does that with all of their panels, which is bring in current players during playoff runs and getting that perspective. And so it was great to see, you know, a current guy give his opinions and give his thoughts on the series as it was happening. I thought it was good because I, for whatever reason, not a lot of hockey players like to do it. And yeah, it does take some courage, but ultimately, like, yeah, you weren't getting cooked. It was pretty popular. Everybody thought that it was working out well for you. And yeah, I think that if it's something that you want to do, you could probably do it. I'm always curious how it comes about, though, because the stories of guys when they actually decide to do it are always like, yeah. Like, I had Derek Roy in here during trade deadline. He's like, yeah, my neighbor works at Sportsnet. And she was like, give it a try. He just came in. How did you start doing it?
Yeah, you know, I've done a couple things with Sportsnet in the past, you know, with Elliot and Jeff, you know, on their podcast, yep. A couple radio hits. And, you know, it wasn't that I was seeking this. You know, they reached out and, you know, gave a potential offer and said to think about it. And then, you know, as we were officially eliminated from the playoffs, you know, I had to give a little bit more thought. And, you know, right just after a season ended in Jersey, you know, obviously things happen fast, the playoffs happen right away. And, you know, I said, sure, I'll come up for the first few days and give it a whirl. So that's basically how it unfolded. It wasn't anything crazy, and I'm glad I did it. So it was a great opportunity for myself, you know, like you said, put an input into someone that's currently playing in the game, has a feel of these guys, these players, the circumstances they're in. Mm-hmm. And I think listeners like that, like you just said, it's, you know, sometimes it's a similar information that's repeated. And, you know, when something gets, you know, a new feel or maybe one or two new things that maybe wouldn't be said without, you know, a current player, I think it's appealing to the viewers.
Okay, well, let me ask you this as a current player. What is the feeling amongst guys about McDavid? Because it just, whenever anybody speaks about him, it's kind of like the way it is with Sidney Crosby, where there's like a reverence for his game. But the difference is, before Sid won, and I know it happened quicker than it did with McDavid, but there was like, he was like a polarizing player, right? He was, people viewed him as a bit of a rat. He would have some of the stuff where he was like viewed as a complainer, as a whiner. Then it shifted after he became a champion. It was became like universally respected. Everybody loves Sidney Crosby. McDavid seemingly has that from the jump, where the way players speak about him, former players, current players, it's very different. Like, he never had to go through the phase of, hey, this guy's got to prove it. Everyone just kind of was like, no. This guy is the best player in our league. This is the most revered player in this league. He's the most talented guy maybe we've ever seen in hockey history. Is that, do you think, an accurate description of the way guys feel about him?
Yeah, I do. You know, it's tough to not to say, it's tough to say a bad thing about him. I mean, I really don't know him as a person. But the only thing I've heard is how awesome a guy he is as well. You know, mm-hmm. I think that goes a long way, you know, how good of a person he is, but also how good of a hockey player he is. And, you know, the way he carries himself, he's all business all the time. You know, we see it all. The spotlight's always on him. So he's got to be on 24/7, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think the biggest thing for me, we all know what he does in the regular season, how good he is. We don't need to talk about it. He's the best player in the league by a mile, and has been for a long time. And as soon as he stepped onto the sheet at Rexall Place, I remember playing against him there, one of his first games, and I was blown away, completely blown away. And that was, I don't know, 8-9 years ago, maybe now. I can't even remember when he first came to the league. But, you know, I think the biggest thing that I've taken away and how much respect I have for him is, you know, obviously Edmonton's come up short the last few years in the playoffs, and they had to go through the ringer to get there. But, you know, this playoffs, his adaptability is incredible. I think he's really shifted his mindset, it seems. When you see him out there, he's all business. Yeah, you get the moments of flash and dash from him, but at the same time, he's playing the game that needs to be played at that certain moment. You know, he's adapting to every game, to every shift, to help his team win. And it's all team first with him right now. And I think that's why it seems like, you know, for the first two games of that series, you know, he's took his game to that deep, hard 200-foot game. And when he needs to, you know, put the Connor McDavid flash on, he will. But at the same time, it seems like him and Draisaitl have shifted their mindset to whatever it takes to win. And I think that's what guys after this playoff run, whether they, you know, succeed or not, are going to really respect even more. And, you know, he's a hell of a player.
Yeah. It's again, I shifted my mindset immediately watching the first game, just seeing the way he was playing. I was like, oh yeah, like, so as great as I felt about Dallas and as good as they were playing, and as deep as they are, and I felt better about their goaltending, I felt better about their blue line. There was just a lot of reasons to be picking Dallas. And he's so great that the way he showed up for game one, I went, oh yeah, if you have that guy on your team, I think you're the favorites. I think you're just the favorites in the series no matter what, if he's flying that way. And the one thing, right, is the whistle has changed a little bit. It's shifted in the series where you got Knobloch talking after the game, doing the like appeal for they want consistency. They want the game called the same way. And no duh, because their power play is unbelievable. What is it like when you're on the ice and Edmonton gets the man advantage and you're in net? What is the feeling?
I've been on the wrong side of that quite a few times. Yeah. So I have a good understanding, but obviously it's a weapon. It's a lethal weapon. And, as if you're Dallas or any other team, it doesn't matter if it's playoffs or not, you can't let them go on the power play. But, as a goalie, and I think Dallas does a great job defensively. They get so much credit for it, but they deserve it. It's patience. They can make that extra play that a lot of teams can't. And obviously, you're focused on McDavid and Draisaitl, but then you have Bouchard's one timer. You have Nugent Hopkins, who can score at will. And then you have, Hyman, knocking you all over the paint, battling in front of the net. So there's a lot of distractions going on, but for me, it's all thinking, it's all intelligence. So I think, Ottinger is obviously an unbelievable goalie. And I think if I was in his shoes, it's about patience and reading the play. I know it's very cliche and simple, but when you're playing against guys like that are seeming east-west, north-south, one-timer, low play, there's just so many options. And they're always moving. They're always in motion. So the biggest thing in motion is, understanding where guys are, which hands, threats, one-timers, things like that. So it's really about, knowing your net, knowing where guys are on the ice, and get a little bit of luck along the way.
Mm-hmm. So I want to talk to you about, there was this last week was a lot about you, right? Where your former coach gets hired here in Toronto, and now your current coach leaves Toronto. You're like, you're the guy. You're the guy to talk to about the two coaches that are here. I'm curious, did you talk to Keith?
He reached out via text and, said we're going to be in touch this week. Obviously, it's probably a whirlwind for him. I don't for even sure. think they've officially announced a press conference in Jersey, if I'm mistaken. So I imagine he'll touch base with all the players this week. And, we still have some guys over at the Worlds that are probably celebrating after the big win there yesterday. So I'm sure I'll connect here soon.
Honestly, that's going to be one of, I think, his favorite things. And I'm sure that you dealt with that going from Montreal to Jersey too, where it's like, yeah, you're going to have your introductory press conference. Don't worry, coach, but not going to have to speak three times a day for the rest of, every single day for the season to have 20 people challenge all of your decision-making. He's going to love Jersey. It is going to feel so good after the pressure cooker that he was in here. Okay. But the guy who is entering it, Berube, everything that you hear about the guy is a positive. And I'm curious about what it was like for your team in St. Louis when he was first elevated to the job.
Yeah. As any coaching change, I've seen a few in my day now, and it takes a little bit of time, and with Chief, it took a few weeks, to get everything under wraps and get going. But once we got going, the ball didn't stop. And I don't just mean just for that year that we won the cup. If you go back to the year that when COVID halted the season, again, we were first place in the National Hockey League with the Bruins, and a lot of people forget about that year because of obviously COVID, and realize how good of a job he did that year. And a lot of us always say you can't go back in time, but we thought we had as good a chance as anyone to repeat that year of the cup if that never happened. I don't think he gets enough credit for that year just because of the circumstances. And you guys have probably heard, I haven't listened to the press conference or anything, but he's just team first. It's completely all about the team with him. And, for the good or for the bad, I don't think he cares who you are in the lineup, but also at the same point, he doesn't. It's whatever it takes for the team to win, team to succeed. And he understands you're not going to win every night. But if you have that attitude, that mindset every single night that you're going out there, you're sacrificing it for the team. And, it might take longer for other guys to adjust to it than some. But at the end of the day, it's generally beneficial for the group. And that's all he's about is the group. And again, it's really tough to find a bad thing to say about him. He comes to work every day. He's in the right mindset. And I think that's a big thing with him. You'll probably hear about him talk, I'm sure, in the Leafs market, about mindset. He's a big proponent on mentality and mindset, and you probably hear that word a lot.
Yeah, I mean, we're not going to get a lot of words from him, though. We had his introductory media conference, and I was like, oh, damn, this is going to hey, you're going to make our jobs harder, buddy. Keith, he'll, you know, wax poetic from time to time. Berube was very short and sweet about it. But the things that he did keep saying, you're right, he was, hey, I want everybody in the lineup to feel really important, really involved with the team. And then he talked about relationship building and that it happens early on, right? He said that that's something that he was getting to work with right away. And that that was how he established accountability, was basically setting what he thought you were going to be responsible for and then holding you to that standard throughout the season. Does that really sound like him? Like, is that what accountability under Craig Berube looked like to you?
Yeah, for sure. No, in a nutshell, yes. You know, and I think, you know, trust is built on relationships, vice versa, from the player to the coach and coach to the player. And obviously that goes for any good coach, but, you know, for Chief to go down, and I'm sure he's going to meet with a lot of the players this summer and then for the ones he has in that camp. And, you know, to build that right off the get-go just puts everything at ease. It really does. Obviously, there's going to be some times where things aren't going to go perfectly for the player, for the group, but that's where, you know, that relationship comes in, that trust factor, that accountability that, you know, boys, we're going to figure this out, or, you know, we're going on a heater here. We're going to keep this ball rolling because we're all accountable to each other. And that's the way that he sees it. And that's the way that he coaches for the most part. And there's going to be challenges throughout the year for every team. Like there always is through this league, because there's so much parity and competition and injuries. But again, that's the next man up mentality that you'll probably hear him talk about, that mindset. And, you know, it's like you said earlier, he's going to try to make every person feel included and important on the group. Goes from, like you said, the backup goalie right through Austin Matthews. Is everyone plays a vital role, whether you, you know, see it on the outside or not. Some things you guys won't see on the outside, but, you know, he really preaches that day in, day out. And one thing that I respect about him, he doesn't change his tune. You know, he's going to say that from the beginning, and he's going to probably say that same thing at the end. You know, I don't think you're going to hear a million different phrases or different philosophies from him, because he sticks to what he believes, and what he believes works.
You know, I think that's a common denominator with a lot of great leaders, is you being consistent, right? And also being someone who reflects the same values that they're putting out to the group. Like, if you think someone is just giving you rah-rah or telling you to do something and you don't feel like they put in the same work or that they're the same person, then I feel like it never resonates. And what I seem to have picked up from about him, from guys who played for him in a multiple different spots, is like, yeah, he is very much a guy who is very authentic and who does resonate with guys because of some of the stuff that you're talking about right now. This one's a little bit of a tougher question, but was there a particular moment with your group, like when he stepped into that head coaching role? And again, I know he was there as an assistant, so you guys were familiar with him. And everyone's seen like the Game 7 speech, right? Like that's famous. That's lore now. But was there a moment for you with the group where you went, oh, damn, like this guy has it. He really is connecting with us in a different way now as the head coach.
Like I mentioned earlier, you know, it's always different when an assistant goes to a head, especially in the same year.
Yeah.
But at the same time, I think I said this on another interview on Sportsnet. Anyway, one of the first meetings we had when he took over at the practice rink in St. Louis, you know, I can't really repeat what he said in that meeting, but I think we all got out of that meeting and realized that, all right, things are going to be different now. I think we all, you know, came out of there with a different perspective, a different mindset, you know, a different understanding that it's not going to be the same around here. We truly did. I think that was felt through all 23 of us. And I think if you probably ask any guy that was on the roster at that time, they'd say the same thing. And, you know, it took a couple of weeks for us to adjust, but once we adjusted, and we really understood what was going on and what the message was consistently every day, the same message, the same approach. We knew what we were going to get when we come to the rink, and then the coach knew that what he was going to get out of the group. And if you go to look back at all the good teams in this league, consistency wins. You know, obviously you need talent, you need good players, you need some luck. But at the end of the day, if you have consistency throughout your group from your, you know, GM right through your players, it brings success. It might not bring a Stanley Cup every year, but you're going to have success.
Yeah. One last one on him. There's always the fear now that when you bring in a quote-unquote accountability coach, right, the coach that is more about the details and that, will hold a player accountable, whether it's, you know, holding back ice time or what, that some of the younger guys now specifically in this current player climate are not going to resonate with that coach the same way. Do you think that there should be any of those kind of concerns? Like what is your read on him with younger guys?
No, I don't think at all. I think he's been through that now. I mean, again, when I was in St. Louis, we were fortunate we had a veteran laden group, but at the same time, you can't be a successful coach in this league if you don't know how to adapt to that situation and that understanding. And I think he's very aware of it. You know, he's very aware of his surroundings and understanding that, you know, the market that he's going to is going to have the spotlight, and he's going to have to deal with all those situations. And again, I mentioned this with McDavid, but I can go back to any position, any job in this game, in this league. You have to be adaptable. And if you can't be adaptable, the game grows every single year. It changes every single year. If you can't be adaptable and understand, then you're going to get left behind. And I think, you know, even after I was gone, I had such a good relationship with a lot of those guys in that organization. I kept in touch with so many of them, and, you know, I never heard a bad thing about them. Mm-hmm. And I think he's understood that that's the way it is nowadays, you know, for take it or leave it. You have to be able to adapt and understand the mindset of different players in different situations. And, you know, if you want to be a successful coach, you got to approach that the right way. And I have no doubt that, you know, he'll take care of that. No problem.
Did any of you guys ever go through his Hockey Fights page?
Oh yeah. Lots on a plane. Lots of times we had a hockey group. The boys loved the game. So we'd always go back and see all those crazy fights. But I wouldn't get on his bad side.
Yeah, well, that was one of my favorite parts about the hire was right away people were like, here's his fight with Brendan Shanahan, and he beat the brakes off him. And, like, granted, Shanahan was young and good on him for taking the fight, but, yeah, it's not a good look. It's not a good one for him. Anyway, Jake, thanks so much for making time, buddy. It was great to get your perspective today.
Yeah, no problem. Appreciate it.
Take care, buddy. Jake Allen, Devils goaltender. Got played under Berube when the St. Louis Blues won the Stanley Cup. Again, this is the stuff that, you know, I've gotten off air to about Berube. It's very reflective in terms of the way that Jake talks about. It's great having a guy that'll, you know, come on and speak about his coach, especially during the summertime. He's still watching the game, but yeah, whatever it seems to be about this guy, I'm really not trying to slag this dude. Because I think enough people have done it already, and it's really kind of a soft target at this point. But one of the reasons why I think that Babcock doesn't work anymore is that people don't view him as a practice-what-he-preaches guy. And that was one of the holes in the entire thing. He was winning. He was successful. He had a great coaching career. But with the quote-unquote accountability stuff down the stretch, it was the feeling of, you know, some of the things that you're displaying outwardly are not the way that some guys view you. And I think the difference with Berube is that when he says these things and he's going to hold these players accountable, or when he is going to build these relationships, that guys are looking at him as consistent and authentic, and that is going to matter here. And that is certainly going to matter if the Leafs are going to be trying to change a culture with some problems, which is that they've still got the same guys up top, right? Harder to change a culture when you're just putting in... If you view it almost like as a corporation, it's like he's still a middle manager of types, right? You've still got your upper bosses that are all the same. But he's going to have to come in there and try to materially change the room and try to get certain guys to buy in with stuff. And I'm pretty encouraged when it comes to the buy-in that Jake's talking about. And when he's talking about consistency, do you think that's been one of the Leafs' calling cards over this last, you know, 8 seasons? Or wouldn't you say, like, they're consistently inconsistent? That's sort of what they are, is that they have those nights and those stretches where you go, these guys are incredible. They might have unlocked it this year. That's what gets people to be so stupid here. I know that everyone says, oh, it's just classic Leaf fans. They win a game, Stanley Cup, they lose a game, they're the worst team in hockey. But no, they actually do have the team that wins that way and loses that way sometimes. We're not just taking crazy pills here. There's definitely a little bit of that, okay? There's a lot of Leaf fans. There's a lot of Leafs media. So, yes, there is certainly a level of overreaction that happens when they're going through those slumps and winning streaks. But that might be one of the most important things for this Leafs team is next regular season playing a consistent brand of hockey throughout a regular season, trying to accumulate points and actually trying to win the division, trying to end up in a spot where you're not crying about the playoff format, where you are happy with the matchup, might be advantageous for you. And part of that, I think, will have to start with being a more consistent hockey team, because this is what happens. We've always said, oh, damn, well, you know, you kind of understand that they've gone in the doldrums and blah, 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 because it's this time of year where they're locked into the playoff spot. And we've made excuses for this group time and time and time and time and time again. And that will be the first big step for Berube to me is people want to talk about the accountability stuff and with the Stars and will it be a taskmaster. No, I think that the real way that you're going to see this group change materially is, are they bought in more from a night in, night out basis? And can he get these guys to actually care about regular season games again? Because it does feel at times, or it has felt at times, and we've all felt it, because it's a long regular season and we're all dying to get to the playoffs. And we know that's where these guys are trying to change their legacies. But can the Leafs perform during a regular season where it feels like they play consistently throughout the season for longer stretches of time, that they've bought into something different, that there are more attention to detail, and that the goal is to just win every single night and not go into cruise control for the amount of time that they are accustomed to in most regular seasons? Anyways, that was great with Jake. Let's take a quick break, come back, hit what we missed.
Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Our boy Mike Jose is the only guy left on Drake Island. He's just like refuses to... He's weird. Again, it's this whole thing. He's like, I need attention. He's like, I'm tall, got tattoos, like, any food. It's just like, yeah, again, he's this weird guy. And now it's like his other last thing to get attention is being like, Drake clearly won. I'm like, okay.
The pre-meeting chat was spicy.
Yeah, it's just enough.
Spiciest
it's
been in a while.
It's just enough. You know what, though? I would like to say, anybody with a brain knows that Kendrick obviously has won this. He made a classic West Coast banger. He had the Haunting Dear Adonis, which, like, still is one of the cooler diss tracks I think I've ever heard. He won. He's got arguably two of the songs of the summer now. And, yeah, there's, like, if you think about just, like, the memorable bars from this, you'll always come away with multiple from Kendrick and essentially zero from Drake. I'm sorry. Even big Drake stans should know this. Like, and I almost feel bad sometimes because I hear... They Not Like Us all the time when you're out in Toronto now.
Oh, yeah.
And it's like this guy really carved out a spot in our city banging that track. Like it's intense. But what I'd like to say is that we're done with this on the show and with all time moving forward. It's over. The beef is done. There's no more moving of the goalposts. The only reason we bring it up is because the guy who's on his side is singing the songs of the guy he claims lost. But yeah, it's Kendrick, and I would say that it's like, it's not even like a 10-7, it's like a 10-4. Like, that's how bad of a beatdown I think it was. And especially since even the only thing for Drake is that he helped Kendrick get his first number one single. And it's like, yeah, man, that was, again, part of your miscalculation is that you put this guy over in an absolutely brand new way, which is insane. Like, he beat you so badly. It's just... It's incredible how bad he got beat. I knew this was a mistake for him, but I never thought it would go like this nuclear in terms of how bad it is for Drake. But this is the end. We've done it. We've hit the limit of the discourse. There's only so much I can do, and there's only so many times I can talk about it, and now this is done. It's over. I've said all I need to say. It's time to move on. All right. What did we miss?
So the TNT panel, you had kind of talked about this before. We reportedly only have, you know, precious few months or a year left with the TNT panel. Yeah. But yeah, they added Draymond for the playoff push, especially the last couple rounds. You don't love it, I gather.
No. There's a lot of reasons I don't love it. So I'm really not trying to be a hypocrite with this thing. Like, I know I just talked to Jake where I said, yeah, bring him into the panel. It's great hearing from current hockey players because we so rarely hear anything from them, especially just, it's usually them coming in talking about their team, uh-huh. their, you know, their seasons. And that's where guys get a little bit tighter. Getting them to speak on the actual game is awesome. They're in it. There's a reason why you always love hearing from guys who just retires because they were just in the game, right? Yeah. They have stories to tell you about what was just going on with certain players. And to have a guy that was in it was great. I like the idea of adding Draymond Green, right? I actually think that he's got there's a lot of room for Draymond Green in NBA discourse and discussion. I'm not a Draymond hater in the way that the internet hates Draymond right now, where like he had the quote about how much he gets taxed.
Right.
And that the NBA is not set up to be wealthy. And the problem is that his level of wealth when he sees people in Golden State that come down to some of those games is different from our level of wealth, which is obvious. Like, he's a wealthy guy. And it's a stupid thing to say, right? Like, it's not a great look.
Mm-hmm.
But I also, that stuff doesn't get me extremely mad. I know he's in a podcast, and I know what the context of the conversation right. is, and I know he's not just going on and complaining like, I'm poor. That's not what he was saying. But I don't hate him like that. I think it's a little annoying that he has these personal grudges and that he's like almost rivaling LeBron in terms of lying sometimes about stuff.
Like, sure.
Like how he would stop Jokic during that series. It was just cringy to watch. But this is why I hate it. Inside the NBA, it's not even about the fact that we're losing it soon, because it does make it feel more precious. There's no doubt about it. But it is an ironclad, perfect product.
Yeah.
Like when they added Shaq, who is one of the best personalities in sports. Remember that? Remember, like, I know you got to go way back. This is like a you and I thing.
Oh, yeah.
But when they first did that, remember they had the ads and they were like Shaq and he was mumbling and...
Yeah. And we the like, first couple of months, people were like, what
yeah,
is
we were
this
like,
going to
holy
be?
Crap, we can't do this. We can't lose the best show to Shaq.
Yeah.
There's an acclimation period that happens with that show. And to add an extra voice where now they've got Draymond who has to go in, it kills the flow. He's like a ball stopper for the panel. And I've just had multiple nights where I'm watching it and I go, I can't wait to hear what Chuck has to say.
Yeah.
And in the intermissions, you're getting nothing really from them.
Yeah.
You're getting these like stinted. Draymond has the best chemistry with the entire group with Shaq. And I don't want to hear the Shaq and Draymond show at halftime. I want the other two guys specifically. I want it to be Kenny and Chuck with a side of Shaq, with a sprinkle of Shaq. I don't want Draymond ball stopping, killing the show, and then having Shaq basically trying to egg him on and get him going with stuff like, I'm over it. I don't care about it. And they're doing this weird thing now, too, where they keep talking about the Lakers versus the Warriors and, you know, Derek Fisher and Kobe versus... enough. I don't care.
Because Draymond starts bringing up Curry so much, and then Shaq's like, oh, my God, I got to bring up the Lakers
just,
to, like,
that's it.
Balances.
I know. It's like I said, it's the weirdest thing about Shaq. I mentioned it in the last round when they were playing Jokic, is he still weirdly has almost like an insecurity, like he's a forgotten piece of the game and that his teams are a forgotten piece of the game. And it just... It's strange because nobody's ever going to forget you, Shaq. Like, you're one of the most unforgettable players ever. You're undeniable, man. You're undeniable. Like, it was insane watching you. Like I said, there were stretches of basketball where it really did feel like you broke the game, that it was no more fun because you played it. It was like, well, who cares? Imagine, okay, the way I can put it to people who didn't watch Shaq in his prime is this. Remember LeBron versus the Raptors and how it felt so unfair? And we were like, LeBronto, and you went, God, I hate this, because every good feeling that you'd have about your season would just get wrecked by him in the games that matter the most. That was everyone with Shaq. That was everyone with Shaq every game, where you would go, well, how is this fair? How is this right? Change the game. Change the rules. Make him shrink. Make him shrink. Only let him play a certain amount of the game. It was just, it didn't feel fair. But I can't do this. Like, I'm screaming at the TV every single night where I'm like, please take Draymond off. Give Draymond his own segment. Put Draymond somewhere else. Let Draymond do his podcast. Just no more inside the NBA. The only time that it's halfway palatable is after the game when you can watch the entire show.
Yeah. And it's the longer form, like,
yeah, and
whatever.
You get the longer form. But even then, like, I don't need Draymond to be the agitator. I don't need Draymond to be making these claims. I don't need Draymond. Like, it just, I don't want it here. I don't think anybody wants it here. And it's just the oddest decision ever that these executives looked at it and said, here's what we need to do. We need to inject something else. Like, why? What? Who is not going to watch? Who's going to watch because Draymond's on it? I would just say, like, what is the additive element of this right now? Like, nothing.
To piggyback on that, like you were saying, we don't need him to be the agitator. Like, that show already has multiple agitators on it anyway. Like, they already have guys who kick up. Yeah.
God, it's just so frustrating. Anyways, that's all I have on it. I just, like I said, I'm not even a Draymond hater. I don't mind Draymond stuff. I thought, like, him and his podcast with Dylan Brooks' back and forth was great. I think when he offers, granted, his very one-sided opinion, it's an interesting look into the way he sees the game. Mm-hmm. He is an interesting figure in basketball, but this push to, like, make him the next guy on the panel, like, we needed another guy on the panel, is it's so unnecessary. I can't remember a broadcasting decision that I agreed with less than this, honest to God. It's just every single time I see, everybody who watches basketball, like, truthfully, like, deeply watches basketball, is excited when you get inside the NBA.
Yeah.
When you have that, you're like, yes! Why would you ever change it? Why? You have the perfect show!
Yeah.
All you have to do is leave it alone, and it just reeks so much of an executive that feels like they have to put their imprint on things and be like, I was the guy who had the idea to add Draymond. And you're like, okay, man, great. That's great. Awesome. Good job by you. Anyways, what's
next? It's the perfect thing that's universally loved. You don't need to change it.
Yeah, please don't.
Caitlin Clark, turning pro has gone pretty well. The team stinks, but she's doing okay.
No,
she turns the ball
great,
over
though,
too
man.
Much.
Yeah, yeah, no. That,
but
you know what, though? That's how I felt about her in college, watching the games, too. And granted, I didn't watch her entire career. I'm not, like, the hardest of hardos, but I really loved watching Caitlin Clark. And one of the things that I would, really say to people that drove me a little nuts was, wasn't great. She's a great playmaker, but she's not great at making an entry pass. Mm-hmm. And you could see that in college. And I went, this is going to be tougher in the WNBA anyway. That's where a lot of the turnovers come from. She's just not great at that yet. She'll get better, but
if she could get a little stronger, it'll help.
Yeah, for sure.
She's obviously going to be great. And it was obviously going to be a bit of a transition going pro.
No, but she's already
amazing.
Doing the damn thing, man. She's already scoring a ton of points. She's knocking down huge trees. She's getting attention for the league. Like, it's all of it has actually worked out.
And the discourse around her is kind of interesting too. Ugh. So the Fever played the Aces this past weekend, and Becky Hammon, Aces coach, had some interesting quotes. She said, kind of about the discourse around Caitlin Clark. She said, quote, "We love Caitlin Clark. Mm-hmm. I think she's amazing. I watch every time I possibly can. Our league loves her." Mm. The narrative of everybody hating on Caitlin Clark, it's just not there. Knock it off. It's just not there. Is Becky Hammon a liar?
Yes. What are you talking about? This is gaslighting 101. What are you talking about here, Becky? I love Becky Hammon. Who doesn't? Yeah. Like, again, we want to talk about, like, universally liked figures. I think she's one of them, right? And I would say, in terms of who has done a lot for women's basketball, Becky Hammon is, like, very high on the list. Like, especially the fact that she didn't leave her coaching post when she had other opportunities in the NBA, making it seem like, hey, no, this is a priority job and I'm keeping this job. To me, that mattered. That was a real action of be the change you want to see in the world, which I commend greatly. People know who Becky Hammon is, and when she speaks, like, they listen, and she resonates with, like, sports fans across the spectrum. But the Caitlin Clark thing is absolutely not true. I'm sure she does love her. I'm sure she, being smart, recognizes the power Caitlin Clark has to the league. But no, the discourse is plain and obvious. We watched Taurasi on a stream say that she'd rather take, like, four different players over her in the WNBA draft. We have seen how much Angela Reese cannot stand the fact that Caitlin Clark gets attention. There is definitely discourse about her sexuality, about her race. Like, I'm sorry, but there is. Like, what are we doing here? All of these things have mattered. They have all been there. I don't know who reads Jemele Hill. Like, I'm not really sure why. Like, it was the most, you could put that into, like, predictive AI. Like, hey, what do you think that she's going to say about Caitlin Clark? Like, oh, really? What a Kelsey Surprise. But yeah, there really does seem to be, I'm trying to think about, like, this happens. This has happened a bit with the European players in the NBA. Like, we have seen some of this, right? Like the pushing back to the Jokic stuff. So I don't want to say like it's completely unprecedented. This happens in men's sports as well. I don't think that this is like a women's sports issue, but there is certainly something about her where the game doesn't seem to be like universally excited that she is the player that they are going to market. And there are a lot of other women in the league who probably are very good right now who feel like they haven't been looked at or that they haven't gotten their shine and that this girl is getting the shine and that she's not getting it for purely basketball reasons and that drives them crazy. And I just don't understand it because the bona fides are obvious. Like, she carried that Iowa team like multiple years with not all farmers, but some farmers on that team, right? There's a farm team. Like, we're never, hey, here's what I'll promise you. We ain't ever going to see Iowa in the women's finals again. It's not going to happen.
Did anyone hate on Wemby like this?
Yeah, tons. I hated on Wemby like this when he was when Wemby was first coming up when he was like 14 or 15. I think I said on record to Blake, like, here's what I promise you, I'm going to fade this 7'5" Frenchman. Like, no way this is going to work. And now I'm like, oh my God, he might end up being the greatest player we've ever seen. Like, he has genuine, we throw this around way too much. He's a GOAT, he's a GOAT. I genuinely think Wemby has GOAT potential. Like, that's how great he is. If he's to stay healthy,
game changer for sure. Like, complete and utter. Yeah. Changes like, everything type of guy.
It's like, the Tragic Hip line, that night in Toronto, him here in Toronto was, oh my God.
That was your Bob Cajun moment?
Yeah, that was, oh my goodness. Oh my God, he moves like that. Oh my God, he shoots like that. Oh my God, no one can score on him. Like, to make Jakob Poeltl look like a little baby boy, to literally put, he broke Scotty Barnes so badly that Barnes, like, basically cried and ran off the floor.
Bye-bye.
He was like, I can't do this.
Out of here.
I've been there. I've been at pickup games where someone's so much better than you that you're like, oh my God, I suck so bad at this. Imagine doing that to guys in the NBA, a guy who was a rookie of the year. He's like, am I good? They did that actually on the TNT panel. Chuck had the thing where he was like, yeah, he was talking to Daniel Gafford and he asked him, he's like, have you ever moments where you wondered if you were good enough to play in this league? And I went, you know how many guys Wemby's going to do that to? Like, year 4 Wemby, when you're coming in the league and you're a rookie and you've scored, you know, 20 a game at Duke, and then you step in and you play Wemby on a Tuesday, and he just, he puts up 34, 11, and 7 on you, and you were 4 of 14 from the floor, and you're like, how could we ever beat that alien? No, he's, I don't even know, but it was about Caleb Clark.
Because what you said made me think of Wemby, because none of the other players really hated on him coming in, or like hate on him during the season.
No, but the thing is, though, is that there is more security in terms of guys' finances, right? Guys getting attention. Everybody, there's room for everybody to get attention in the NBA. And with the WNBA, this is, again, you see this with unstable organizations or places that are still trying to find themselves that aren't secure, which is that there's like a famine mentality. They feel like, oh, well, there's only so much attention to go around, and so we need to spread the attention. It can't just all be Caitlin Clark. And it's like, just chill out for a second. Let Caitlin Clark be the apple of everybody's eye. All of a sudden, people are going to pay more attention to the WNBA, and then they're going to know what Angel Reese did on a given night. They're going to know who some of the other players are in the league. Like, it's going to come. She's nothing but good. That, I guess the main point of this is, the idea that there's like a drawback to Caitlin Clark because of her popularity, her race, her sex is crazy. It's just, it's unnecessary. She should be completely embraced as something that is fun and interesting about the WNBA, a league that has been fighting for eyeballs for decades and has never had a moment that was anything even close to this. Mm. So embrace it, be happy, and celebrate a great player that has a great trajectory. And stop trying to pick the proper champion that you need. Anyways, subscribe to this podcast, leave 5 stars, and we'll see you tomorrow.